Time to get our view from the middle, opening a Wednesday, first day of March. You can find his work for USA Today at your local newsstand, online, usatoday.com. On Twitter, the handle is at George Schroeder. Mr. Schroeder, how are you doing these days, sir?
I'm great. How are you?
Awesome. Now, I know by trade, obviously, you're a college guy, football, but you cover hoops, and I mentioned it's the 1st of March, so as opposed to, say, Labor Day weekend when college football kind of takes over the world, how high on your personal scale does this time of year March Madness rate?
Well, once we finally get to it, I mean, I get it that this is championship week for all the little, the smaller school, the smaller league tournaments and stuff like that, and that's great. But I'm one of those guys that the first two days, of the, in other words, the two first round days are as good of any day in sports in terms of just any day you want to pick. I mean, it's 100 times better than the Super Bowl for me. It's as good as the college football playoff and the championship game for me. And of course, I'm working on all of those days, so that I guess I don't ever get the full fan experience to get to kind of just sit back and watch them, but. Day one and day two, Thursday and Friday, the NCAA tournament might be my two favorite days of the sports year.
That's awesome. Gonzaga, they were unbeaten. Then they lost at home to BYU, who's not even a bubble team. And we do this every year, it seems like. Excellent program. We know they're in the tournament. But the bottom line is, until 2 years ago, they haven't even reached the Elite Eight under Mark Few. That conference, the West Coast Conference, would I be out of line to say, they play a good non-conference schedule, but after 2.5, 3 months of that league, is the evidence there that it just doesn't keep them tournament sharp?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the biggest thing. Look, it's a very talented team, and on a given night, they can play with anybody in the country. And I don't think that the rankings that they've had all year long are necessarily wrong. I mean, we can dispute who's number one and who's number five.
Yep.
Your top five or six or seven teams, are all really, really good, and Gonzaga definitely fits in that category. The difference is, and this is what you were just sort of getting at, the other top five or six or seven teams have all played run a much more difficult conference gauntlet, regardless of which conference they're actually in. The West Coast Conference, even in its best years, has only had a couple of teams that, would fit into sort of the kind of category of giving you a serious challenge when you're as good as Gonzaga. So it's on the one hand, credit to what Mark Few has built in the inland northwest there in Spokane. I mean, it's a fantastic thing they've done. And I'm not one of those guys who got into they've not gotten to the Final Four thing. And you're right, it was a couple of years ago and down in Houston that they finally got to the Elite Eight and ran into a pretty good Duke team. I'm skeptical this year that they were worthy of a one seed, just because I've seen these other teams play a lot better competition. Now, I'm not saying that a loss to BYU is actually a bad thing for them. I think it may knock them off the one line, but it's maybe the best thing that could have happened to them, frankly.
Yep.
In terms of not being unbeaten going into the tournament. I mean, they're a little bit more battle-hardened than they would have been, and they took a loss, which is sometimes a good thing. But I've got to tell you take your pick, and I know which pick it would be for your listeners, of the Pac-12 teams, and any of those three is a better one seed than Gonzaga at this point, in my mind.
All right. Go ahead.
Which one? I don't really know which one the good folk in Eugene want it to be.
Yeah.
Take a wild guess.
By the way, when we spoke last Wednesday, you mentioned how the dangers this time of year, nothing to take for granted, and lo and behold, Oregon needed a buzzer beater to escape. And we've seen North Carolina, Duke, or Kentucky teams in past years. It was like, look, they just look better than everyone. And sure, there's no way to know, but this landscape, when you look at the top 10, top 15, does it look like really wide open, like X amount of teams more than usual could make that big run?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's probably six or seven teams that you could say legitimately have a shot to win the whole thing. But that's probably three or four more teams than usual, than you think that. I mean, I think Oregon, UCLA, and Arizona all have a shot to potentially, if they get it going right way, get the right matchups and have the right days, not only get to the Final Four, they could win it. I think that you can pick two or three ACC teams, and that league is deeper than any other league this year.
I agree.
But you could pick two or three ACC teams at the top of that league, and they could win the whole thing if things go well. I mean, North Carolina is clearly the best of that bunch, despite the loss to Virginia. I think Kansas could win it all. I think Baylor could get to the Final Four. I don't think they can win it all. I think, they obviously played a good game against Oregon way back in the non-conference, and they played some good games. But you look around the country, and I know I'm leaving people out. I think a lot of teams could win the whole thing. I think Gonzaga could win the whole thing. I don't think they're going to.
Right.
I think these other teams, going back to what we were just talking about, are a whole lot more battle-hardened. And let me just say this. That's one of the reasons why Oregon is not the most talented of all those teams I just mentioned. It's probably not the most talented team in the Pac-12. It might fall behind both Arizona and UCLA, but it definitely falls, I think, in my mind, behind UCLA just in total talent. And that's not a slight, because it might be the most talented, just sort of depth-wise, team Oregon's ever featured. And I know there are those Elite Eight teams with Ernie. I get that. I'm just talking about top to bottom, interchangeable parts, that kind of thing. But regardless of where you put them in the talent, I actually think the reason I think they got a shot to go a long, long way is because of how battle-hardened those guys are, not just this year, but last year. The experience they had last year in the tournament, and then they've kind of all grown up. So I think that's a big, big deal. When you start looking around it and saying eight teams could win the whole thing, or if you want to say 15 teams could get to the Final Four or whatever it is, then I'd say, okay, I don't have a problem with that. I think that's the kind of year it is. So who's got the most talent, but who's got the most sort of moxie that's been sort of forged in the fire? And I think Oregon stands up pretty well on both those counts.
No, that's a great word, moxie, for this team, and I've been here 27 years, and I won't. And I've said this: I'm not using qualifiers. This is the best Oregon team I've seen.
You've been there, obviously, since they started growing moss on the rocks. So it's been a long time, and I was only there for 6 years, and I've been gone a few years, but I've certainly paid attention to what Dana's been doing, and so I missed Ernie Kent's Elite Eight teams, but I saw them from afar before I got there.
Sure,
but this team. It's just—I don't know how to describe it. They've got a bunch of guys who are sort of similar looking in the way they play, just the same kind of body shape and style and the way they play and the things they can do, which I think is pretty cool. I mean, very interchangeable parts. I said a second ago, but the thing I like about them is they're sort of relentless. They come at you in waves during the game, and they seem to be unfazed even when. Maybe they make dumb mistakes, or maybe the other team gets on a hot streak, but whatever it is, they don't ever seem to get really, truly rattled. Maybe I haven't seen every single game this year, but I've seen a lot of them. And so maybe you've seen some times when they did, but I think within games they don't get rattled, and I don't think they get rattled much by the occasional loss either. Obviously, the next loss in the tournament is your last loss, but I like them a ton.
No, I think that because of their coach and his staff, they're kind of like the student who has done all the studying and won't panic when they're handed the final. So,
well, that's what you hope, right? Yeah. But I mean, I think we've seen that for much of the year. That's what I'm trying to say.
No, I agree. I think it's spot on.
Yeah. I think that's a really important trait in March. It's at least as important as the talent. I mean, obviously, you've got to be able to play.
Sure.
But they've got that. And so if they run up against a team with better talent, I think sort of their mentality and the fact that it's sort of born of having played in these kinds of games before, then they're done that sort of thing, like, could carry them over some teams like that.
Talking with George Schroeder, USA Today, you wrote a piece on Gene Chizik, who folks may remember was the head coach of the Auburn team that beat Oregon for the title now 6 years ago. So I didn't even realize he just announced his retirement, and we hear spend more time with the family, but like you wrote, kind of really, really an interesting guy. When he moved his family to Auburn, he told them no more moving. So even when he took the job with the Tar Heels, worked in TV, they still stayed in Auburn.
Yeah, so, you know, he took the job in Auburn, like, in, I guess, December of 2008 or whatever it was, and a couple years later, I would say they won the title against Oregon. And 2 years after that, he got fired. They went 3-9 overall and 0-8 in the SEC, and Auburn's a place where you can't do that, especially when Alabama's winning big. And he got fired, so he was out of football in 13 and 14. And sort of they stayed in Auburn. And part of that is because they had promised their kids. They have two twin daughters who are now 19-year-old freshmen at Auburn, and they have a son who's a, I guess he's 16-year-old sophomore at Auburn High School. And they had just promised them, you know, back when they were grade schoolers, elementary school kids, when they got there in 08, and, you know, that they were not going to move around a bit. He had been at the University of Central Florida. He'd been at Auburn. He'd been at Texas. He'd been the head coach at Iowa State. And now all of a sudden he'd moved to Auburn again. So you get these kids who have moved all over the place. And that's sort of the itinerant lifestyle that these coaches often have.
Sure.
As they're moving up the ladder, for sure. And so, they promised him that, yeah, that you're going to have a place to call home. This is going to be it. And so they stayed there while he did TV and radio those 2 years he was out in 13 and 14. And then he took the job in Chapel Hill, and the initial thought was, okay, the girls are, you know, juniors and seniors or whatever in high school, and we're going to the twin daughters, we'll move up after that. You know, I'll then my wife and my son will move up. And instead, they got to that point, and the son didn't want to leave. He, you know, he'd now been there since about the first or second grade, right?
Right. Right.
Didn't want to go, and also kind of had a good thing going athletically and that kind of stuff in high school, and so they stayed last, you know, this school year, and after the football season, Gene sort of had a, you know, had a lot of conversations about, you know, I think I'm missing way too much of my children's lives, and I think this long-distance relationship that I've had these last two seasons as an North Carolina defensive coordinator is probably not the way we should be doing it. And so instead of sort of forcing them to move, I'm just coming home. And I actually think that's pretty admirable. I don't know that he's not actually calling it a retirement, as you referenced it.
Okay.
But he's 55, and so, I mean, I think it's very possible that if he does stay out 2 years while his son, you know, is a sophomore now, is a junior and a senior the next two football seasons, it's possible that at 57, you know, there aren't quite as many options, or maybe he doesn't go back to the game. But I just find it admirable that, you know, because one of the things that – you and I see when we get to know these coaches to a certain extent is how much of a grind the job is.
Right.
Even when your family's in the same city and you're sleeping under the same roof, his wife mentioned to me that, you know, they're used to dad being up and out of the house before anybody else gets up, going off to the office, and then coming home and going to bed after everybody's gone to bed. And you basically, you're not really there. And so it's kind of cool to me to see him making that choice to spend time with his son. And then obviously the daughters are still in the same city.
No, I thought it was awesome because it's something we take for granted. You always hear, well, they should hire this coach. They should hire this coach. And we think about, yeah, so they move across the country. So they move. You don't
right.
take for granted the wife, the kids, buying a house and all that. It was a real neat kind of inside look. And folks, you could check it out. Go to usatoday.com.
Please do.
I believe that's your most recent piece, right?
Yeah, it is. It ran in print yesterday.
No.
So, you know, it's probably no longer at the newsstand. But, you know, you can check it out there, too, if you want. So,
by the way, George, it dawned on me. You mentioned he's 55. So I'm 56, and I love my job. If I hit the lottery or had, like, an Aunt Tilly who left me $11 million, tomorrow I would retire and play golf.
No, you wouldn't. See, this is – you love your job too much. Who would you be talking to? The guys at Sam's Place? Come on, man.
I'll be talking to the guys at my exclusive country club in my foursome every day.
Okay, I'm just saying. And by the way, forgive me, I don't actually know who your current endorsement deals are with.
Sam's is good. Awesome.
Okay, good.
We're going to be there Saturday.
Oh, boy, I just got us into trouble here. But,
no. We're actually going to be doing our pregame from Sam's Saturday. It's like you totally nailed it. That's awesome.
All right. Well, I'll be sending the invoice to y'all later.
But you got it.
No, but, I mean, come on, man. If you won the lottery tomorrow or the Publishers Clearinghouse thing or whatever, your ship came in, you'd still be doing the show because you love the show.
All right. Time I tell somebody that, they're like, there's no way you would quit. So maybe you guys know me better than I do. I want to wrap with Kevin Durant. You live in Oklahoma, and this has been less than 24 hours. And I know you have friends in the media, family, and people who follow sports, fans. Are you hearing? Wait a minute. But you see what I just did, George? I assumed Durant was still with Oklahoma City. Wow.
I thought you were going to ask me if people are like taking some sort of a perverse glee, and my answer was going to be no. I think people do feel bad for him.
Okay, well,
they don't feel bad for the Warriors, but I think they feel bad for Kevin Durant, even though everybody's still not happy with him. You may have picked up about leaving Oklahoma City, but I don't think anybody wishes ill on him.
Okay, I'm happy to hear that, and you did a nice redirect there, because as I'm saying it, I'm like, wait a minute, Durant's not even on OKC anymore.
Right.
Wow.
Let me just say this. Had that happened and he was at the Thunder, the on-edge part of this sort of sporting conscious for the Oklahoma City and, in fact, the entire state of Oklahoma would have been palpable as they waited to see what the diagnosis was. Because, as you know, there were several hours there when I think they feared the worst,
yep.
Like it was a torn ACL. And, you know, it was going to be out the rest of the season and, you know, surgery, rehab, whatever. And instead, it looks like they're thinking 4 weeks, and it's not exactly minor, but it's, you know, not nearly as bad as what they were concerned about. So I can only imagine how the Warriors feel about it, but I can promise you that had that happened with him in a Thunder uniform, I mean, he meant so much more in terms of the franchise to the Thunder than he does to the Warriors. And that's no slight to him. Fact that the Warriors were already really, really good without him.
Well,
they've got three other All-Stars.
Yep. No.
And they basically returned, you know, essentially the same team that, you know, should have won last year and did win it the year before. And so, you know, I'm guessing that Warriors fans are bummed, but it isn't anything like the, even if it had been a torn ACL, their reaction wouldn't have been the same as had that same thing happened to the Oklahoma City fans. Wouldn't have known how to. It would have been like a national day of mourning or something.
Well, you bailed me out there, so if I ever go to jail, I know who to call. We always appreciate
Sam's Place. Call your friend Sam's Place.
There you go. Always appreciate your time. Good stuff, George. Enjoy, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, man. Take care.
Take it easy.